Thank you for listening to a reading presented by the Poetry Center of Chicago. The Poetry Center is an independent, nonprofit arts organization promoting poetry in Chicago through readings, workshops, and arts education. To learn more about the Poetry Center, to read poems by our students in Chicago Public Schools, or to donate, please visit www.poetrycenter.org.
Good evening. On behalf of the Poetry Center, welcome to the reading by Kenneth Koch and Dean Young. I have a few announcements to make before we start. Tomorrow, Kenneth Koch will give a free workshop for teachers. If any of you is interested, whether you are a teacher or not, if you're interested in teaching poetry to children, it's designed for elementary school teachers. It's free. It's at Jones Academic Magnet School, which is at 606 South State Street, just on the other side of the Congress Expressway. If you are interested, we need to have you register, and you do that by just calling the Poetry Center, 899-7483. We're in the book, in case you don't write it down. Also, the next reading on Wednesday, March 29th, will feature the novelist Frederick Bush and the poet Kay Ryan. Thank you for coming. I introduce Mark Perlberg.
They move the stairs. Such is life. You never know what's going to happen. Thank you for coming. I'm a member of the board of the Poetry Center. And before I introduce David Wojon, who will speak to you about tonight's guests, I want to say a word about the woman for whom this annual reading is named, the late Martha Friedberg. And I'm happy to say that some of Martha's relatives and friends are in the audience tonight. Martha was one of the founders of the Poetry Center, which is celebrating its 25th anniversary this season. This makes the center by far the longest-running reading series open to the general public in the city's history. It's no exaggeration to say that one of the reasons why we have reached our majority and beyond is that Martha was a generous patron of the center and one of its chief guiding spirits. Martha was a woman of wit, sophistication, and great kindness, and she was an excellent poet who published 3 books of poems, each beautifully illustrated with woodcuts. She would be delighted to know that Kenneth Koch and Dean Young will be reading under her banner tonight. And may I now introduce David Wojon, distinguished poet and critic and director of the University of Indiana's writing program, who will speak to us about tonight's poets. David.
It's a great pleasure to introduce to you 2 poets tonight, one of whom may be the most inventive and original poet of my own generation, and one of whom is one of the most inventive and original poets at work today, period. Dean Young is the author of 4 collections of poetry, Design with X and Beloved Infidel, which were published by Wesleyan, Strike Anywhere, which was the winner of the Colorado Prize in Poetry, and First Course in Turbulence, which appeared from Pittsburgh last year. He's received fellowships from the NEA, the Fine Arts Work Center, and from Stanford, a Stegner Fellowship. His poems have appeared in many journals and anthologies, and he's a professor of English here in Chicago at Loyola University. You don't so much enter a poem by Dean Young as you get hurled there. And once you can collect your thoughts and survey your surroundings, you find a world that is in some ways dependably familiar, but in other and more frequent ways, utterly strange, and where frightening and serendipitous events present themselves by turns. This is to say, he understands the workings of the surrealist aesthetic better than almost any poet born since 1950, understands its world of dream and chance and ecstasy and nightmare, and understands how that world superimposes itself on this world relentlessly and often when you least expect it. It is a world you wouldn't want to inhabit for long, but if you had to inhabit it, you'd find in Dean Young the most dependable and knowing guide to its geography, and the sort of guide you can immediately trust. He's always showing you something interesting. He has an uncanny ability to imagine new metaphors and striking associations and a brilliant sense of comic timing. But most important of all, he possesses a big-hearted generosity of spirit, the kind of compassionate vision that is a rare thing in contemporary poetry. The world he must guide you through makes no sense at all, and it is often a brutal world, but he proves to you again and again that he's the very best Sherpa you will ever find. Or maybe he's your Virgil. Whatever he is, he knows that, as he puts it in one of his poems, we are clouds and terrible things happen in clouds. Kenneth Koch, as David Lehman reminds us, is our funniest poet. But Koch has had what Lehman calls the misfortune to be a comic poet when the lyric poem is the be-all and end-all of verse, and is mistakenly held to be incompatible with the spirit of comedy. In other words, the problem lies with us and not with Kenneth Koch. And to read his poems in the way they should be read, you have to realign many of your notions, many of the notions you've been taught about poetry, all the pieties you've grown to accept from critics and the period style. And instead remember what it was that probably attracted you to poetry in the first place. When you read Koch, you remember that poetry arises first from delight, and that it is wrong for poetry to end in wisdom, but in that process, abandon delight. Stevens said that one of the requirements for poetry, which made it the supreme fiction, is that it must give pleasure. Most of our poems today do not give pleasure, neither for their readers nor for their writers, but Kenneth Koch's poems surely do, and have done so dependably for some 50 years. They give you pleasure because of their mastery of invention, both in regard to their giddy command of parody and comedy, and also to their use of form, for he is one of the most gifted prosodists of our time, whether he is shaping a list poem or writing in strict couplets. The poems give you pleasure while at the same time instructing you, and in efforts such as his magnificent long poems, The Art of Love and The Art of Poetry, you hear echoes of great classical masters of instruction, such as Horace and Ovid. And you, of course, can also see how pleasure and instruction are connected when you read Koch's legendary educational works. Wishes, Lies, and Dreams, his account of teaching children to write poetry, has no doubt created more poets and readers of poetry than the Iowa Writers' Workshop ever will. And Koch continues to be an active teacher of poetry at Columbia. He is the author of 16 books of verse, 2 collections of fiction, and several works for theater. He has won many awards and honors, among them the Bollingen Prize. As he writes in the beginning of his poem, Nights and Days, it came to me that all this time there had been no real poetry and that it had to be invented. Well, this is exactly the problem that Kenneth Koch has set out to solve, and he has done so brilliantly. Dean Young will be the first reader. Kenneth Koch will follow him, and afterwards they'll take some time to answer some of your questions. Thank you.
Hi, thank you all for coming. To hear Kenneth Koch read, you have a lot of good sense. The first time I met Kenneth, I said to him, "It's a real honor to meet you," beginning my prepared remarks, and he said, "Oh, get over it, Dean." But I just need to say a little bit tonight, and I have him trapped. His work has been like a lantern to me. As long as I've been writing poetry, his vitality, his innovation, it never ceases to inspire me. And I think that places a fair amount of the blame for what I'm about to read tonight squarely on him. This is called Sunflower. When Dean Young vacuums, he hears not just time's winged whatchamacallit hurrying near, but some sort of music that isn't the motor or the attic or the sucked-up spider's hosannas or his mother pounded into a rectangle or what's inside him breaking, because the only thing conclusive all those tests showed is inside him is some sort of crow, so unsure of its crowness it thinks it's a stone, just as a stone thinks it's a dark joke in the withered fields and has to be so opaque to keep all its ketchupy light inside, because you never know what son of a bitch is hanging around waiting for a chance to steal your thunder. When Dean Young has his thunder, nothing moves. Not the dust in the hose, not the music, not even the eye of the crow. It drives him crazy how little effect he has. He thinks of his friends at ballparks and feels miserable. He thinks of women's behinds and feels radiant. He's afraid how he invented running by moving his legs very fast will be forgotten, attributed elsewhere. He can't resign himself to losing the patent on masturbation. On the other side of the back of his head hangs his face, which he puts strawberries into. He dreads strawberries because their mouth is bigger than his. He dreads his wife because he loves her. His strong opinions, capital punishment, arts education, the Newman dissolve in water, the universal solvent that falls from clouds, clouds that were his idea. Oh, I'm afraid this is a Valentine poem. But it's called Changing Your Bulb. I disconnect the power for at least 5 minutes until your bulb is cool and no longer producing song through small chewing devices at the end of its beak. Clunk goes the tipped over pounce meat. When I change your bulb, am I really changing my own? This concludes these opening remarks. Later, you will be asked to repeat them as a test of mental decay. Now take your steel ring by any sharp tool at the place of two gap, or at least that's what the instructions say. Maybe you were made in China. I have loved you longer than my one life. In the north, Siegfried rests after his hunt. The new adults go into summer hibernation, called estivation, but we are just waking. Wing wear, always a troublement. But there, in the wild valley and forest by the Rhine, your new bulb gets installed, acting mainly as an acerbation to fuzzy brain function. I feel like I'm approaching a cliff wrapped in an enormous kite, cheery as life insurance. And I can't be sure if the statuary is of rich citizens or supernatural forces. Finite is our sadness upon this earth, Shabab. Smoke is the voice, hammer the moment, doo-wop. One magic sleep ends, beginning another. So I insert your glass shield back into your reflector, and it is like you have never been gone. In the distance, Valhalla is burning, and the old gods calmly wait their pupation in the unprotected crevices. There is a part of the spirit that cannot be destroyed. That can be terrifying, people doing that. You know, you think, okay, they clapped a little bit. Now I feel worse. So for the rest of my reading, if you could all quietly talk among yourselves, we could get through this really quickly. This is called Eidos. Mary suddenly laughs. Of course not, yes, no, never in a million years. Mary talking. Mary up a tree smoking. Mexican food with Mary. Quantum mechanics. Everything flattened, pleated, flush. Inexpensive metal shelving full of doll parts. Typical of such work, A grid of interlocking rectangles is juxtaposed with a pile of rubble. How hard it is to get at the human heart. Mary talking about falconry, about hail. At any moment, an announcement's expected, but that's what moments are for. Always something destroyed, something raised from the ocean floor, and subsequent legal wrangles. She wants to wrap the trees in silk. Next slide. Identical blocks of creosote may mean the body is a bird in flight, stilled by electroshock. Typical of such work, the blood is fake, but the bleeding's real. Getting at her heart. Getting her to shut up about Agnes Martin and polar exploration. Mary suddenly in tears. Actually, it's fiberglass. Eidos means in Greek a visceral image of a mental state. There's no such thing as a mistake. Does she ever sleep? As if by accident, a delicate feather, the face rubbed out, the face replaced by a bunch of grapes. When the maggots pupate, the show's over. Mary suddenly alone, her boat capsized, never seen again, alternately moves to Berlin, starts an influential magazine, wood crutches, bathrobes, newspaper, glue, bone, dimensions unknown. This is called Bright Window. I was born through a bright window. Winged faces, docile lions, the usual heliocentric wires. The gods loved playing tricks then, festooned in wires, making the wine dregs pour forever, switching the reels so midway through children of paradise, while E. Coyote creams himself again. Meep, meep. Everyone in a hurry in clouds of ink like frightened squid. I had a friend who spun in the rain until her makeup melted and a scar remains on my retina. I had a friend who thought the secret was in turning a turntable backwards. One pill made you stronger, one pill and you could fly. I had a friend who crashed us through a cornfield and all the husk could do was sing, but that was all right. It was singing that mattered to us. Had weight, occupied space, in motion, tended to stay in motion, at rest, rest. You start with the darkness to move through, but sometimes the darkness moves through you. I loved those cold May mornings, stalling the wisteria. None of the oils yet, just sketch. The million buds of I don't know what, waiting by the stairway where no one's crying yet or laughing. Not one leap yet in the dance. It's almost impossible to be afraid. The furnace kicking on one last time. The animal dragging itself a short way from its birth. Sometimes I sit for hours watching people struggle with the big glass doors, trying to fit small lids on large cups. You can't have it back, says the fire affectionately. You never needed it anyway, promises the earth. I'm sure many of you know Pound's version of a poem by Li Po called The River Merchant's Wife, A Letter. But a lot of people don't know that there's actually another poem in which the river merchant writes a letter back to his wife later in their life. And this is it. And forgive me for the lousy translation. It's called The River Merchant, Stuck in Kalamazoo, Writes His Wife a Letter During Her Semester Abroad. We were looking forward to being alive. Now you new place, me not too. Strange taste afternoon, lonely for hummingbird mouthful. You somewhere else make everywhere else elser. I know almost nothing about this flower growing from my chest. Does it need deadheading? Only you not answer. This complete the test of the emergency broadcast system? The definition of the female breast as modified sweat gland certainly leave out curfew breaking. Sunny melon morning all day. Remember? In my dream, almost get your sash off, but then wake of sadness. Forceful but gentle, I not girl scaring want to explain. Not like Jim explain his night in jail, so fly around, he explain other nights in jail. No hello river in the sky then. When someone love you, afraid making you'll never come back. Nice to be afraid making in that way. Not nice among dumb bamboo thickets. Gazillion crickets, not one Thelonious monk. Ha ha, only so long. Soon snow fall on the no more factory. Me too. This is called Side Effects. I'm careful. Ah, there is water under here. Your papillae momentous is shot. These pills may help, but you'll probably lose your right arm. My right arm? How will I live? So the client thrashes out of the office like a man learning to swim by drowning, but after a couple weeks, he can almost float, button his own coat. So he goes back to the specialist who says, I bet your palace of Moranzini's collapsed. Maybe this drug will work. It seems to have some effect on black widow bites. Only thing is, you'll have to give up your lake. My lake! For days afterward, everyone he sees is carrying a kayak. Nautical analogies overflow even the financial section. Now would be a good time for a couple of strangelets to shred the fabric of reality. But his experiments as a cyclotron don't amount to much dark matter. So reality goes on with a sloshing sound, a pointless flopping in his chest, and then the doctor says, it's got to be your heart. And the man cries out, Lord, you've got me in your tweezers now. Ha ha, what an opportunity to meet your deductible. You just fly three inches over yourself and declare a national disaster. Look at those miserable robots down there trying to start their cars, pay their interest, cook eggplant. Let's see what happens when we drop this big rock, saith the Lord. The whole planet wobbling on its loose axles while the patients come and go, some getting weaker, buying expensive sunglasses and losing them, some getting stronger, buying expensive sunglasses and breaking them. Puddled mud, the bones ground down and thrown upon the hibiscus to encourage sturdier blooms. So the waters freeze and melt, the mountains rise and shrug, the bolts of the Ferris wheel loosen and are tightened, snow approaches the house and turns back, forgetting why it came. So the dead father says in the dream, I didn't want you to know, but now you know. Bam, bam, bam. You think you want out, but you want in. You're on the wrong side of the door. You're on the fifth green when the lightning comes. You're halfway through your sandwich, and they've already taken your plate. The food is good here, but the service crazy, and you wonder why you came, why you've been coming for years, and still no one knows you. Because no one knows you? Silly you to be known anyway. Now that the grid is showing the chicken wire they affixed the flowers to. It's almost 3 and the rain has stopped. The sun comes out and it's not an accusation or a plea. You can sit in it for a minute, drink your tea before the declensions of evening into the infinitive of sleep. First you will wake in disbelief, then in sadness and grief, and when you wake the last time, the forest you've been looking for will turn out to be right in the middle of your chest. This is called Pulse. This time, the illusion took the shape of a house I'd lived in for 9 years. What polish! Rooms oscillating with light, a rose thorn casting a thorn shadow, grays twinged with blues. What fine detail! Forsythia, salt, eight-foot extension cords. You could walk into a door and your head would think it was bleeding. Sometimes the dead people would let their children play in the street with their remote control monster trucks. Even if you scratched a surface to blister, Under it would be another surface, like a drawing of a bowl of peaches under a painting of a pile of skulls. And the dirt. Look at it under a microscope, you'd see encyclopedias, ganglions, arcs, huge gears, Dürer at work with his grids. A hawk tore apart a dove in the backyard. You could smell lightning, smelt the air, so who could blame me for how far I slipped into belief? Pick a card, any card, it'd never be blank. My wife, even asleep, didn't turn to dust, and when I thought I was dying, I was given milligrams of chemicals as if my belief could not be mocked. And I thought I was healed as if my belief could not be mocked. Every spill transversed its singular stain, and no matter how quickly I turned around, I'd never catch any of it dissolving. But a few times, lying in the dark that was never really dark, I thought I saw a cup or a book or a handkerchief blink off then back on, throbbing like a thing about to fall apart. I think most poets ask themselves, how can we get more energy and more vitality in our work? And I think one of the ways we can do it is by insulting other poets. And, you know, I don't expect to be invited back here anyway. This is called How Upon Scaping I Learn My Vehicle Is Not Seaworthy, and Upon My Tragic Recapture and Long Interment, During Which I Write These Words Through a Secret System Involving My Own Blood. When I got up from my nap in 1999, there were fewer of my kind around. Apparently, it had been circulated that if you cracked our oblongatas correctly, you could harvest a fair amount of plutonium-57. Although, in my experience, no one knew the proper technique. Still, they tried. The shattered remains of my tribe hauled to the curb every Monday night when the downstairs people screamed about their ranunculus until I called the authorities. Mid-17th century Holland, it was tulips, but now it's ranunculus. In the bathroom was a book of poems by Henri Cole about how sad and exquisite and made of goopy lace everything was. I hated those poems. Even a regular burrito, no guacamole, was more full of life than those poems. Yet each time his school met mine, they won, walking away. Often our guards would complain of pangs misterioso the night before engagement, and their hearts would go crochet. It was March, month of human intercourse that makes such a mess of April. So I tried to file my report, but part of what I wanted I knew I'd never get, yet when I didn't, I felt driven to account for the contrary forces within. Can you see what I was up against? I was just like you until I was alone. Then I was a cherry blossom. Okay, I'm going to read two more poems. Is that enough, Kenneth, or should I leave now? Okay, thank you. I have no idea what I was just communicated, but this is called Non-Compliant. If I ask everybody if they can hear me now, it means that I really didn't care if you could hear me. Right? So, guess I won't. I was born in Pennsylvania before the plain folk discovered amyl nitrate and elected a stripper regent. We had two pleasures, swimming in clouds, which we called prayer, and going to the fridge in the sweating night, pausing there in the cold exhale of light, before being torn away, and that was the sermon. I wasn't put on this earth to explain. In those days, you'd spend a week weaving yourself a straw hat. God would smote in an instant over some commandment technicality. So you were never alone, even masturbating. So we sat around drinking tea that tasted like flying ants, trying to decide what happens after death. Of course, everything sounded like another version of life. The blazing filament, constant ice cream, big eagle tearing you apart, then regurgitating you for its chicks, obscure statutes regarding oral sex. You'd get everything you ever wanted because you wouldn't want it anymore. Be sure, before opening the door, be sure it isn't hot, encased where you're going is in flames. Sunlight falls upon the stone stairs. I loved my friends, and they helped me with the electrodes in my PJs. Somehow I endured. Sure you did, says the wind locked on the exercycle. The roses in riot over the fence, the dream life measured out in fluid ounces. Maybe next time, say the waves upon the tarry beach. What next time, says the moon. It hardly has to do with my heart, although that's the preponderance of gathered data. Starlight falls upon the stone stairs. The river is a river of mist, not the gulp, the sip. Great flocks of machinery muster on near hills. There's a mention of a bookstore in this poem. It's a used bookstore called Moe's. It's called How I Get My Ideas. Sometimes you just have to wait 15 seconds, then beat the prevailing nuance from the air. If that doesn't work, try to remember how many times you've wakened in the body of an animal. Two arms, two legs, willowy antenna. Try thinking what it would be like to never see your dearest again. Stroke her gloves, sniff his overcoat. If that's a no-go, call Joe, who's never home but keeps changing the melody of his message. Cactus at night emits its own light. The river flows under the sea. Dear face I always recognize but never know. Everything has a purpose from which it must be freed. Maybe with crowbars, maybe the gentlest breeze. Always turn in the direction of the skid. If it's raining, use the rain to lash the window panes, or, in a calmer mode, deepen the new greens nearly to a violet. I can't live without violet, although it's red I most often resort to. Sometimes people become angelic when they cry, sometimes only ravaged. Technically, Mary still owes me a letter. Her last was just porcupine quills and tears, tears that left whitish residue on black construction paper. Sometimes I look at used art books in Moe's just to see women without their clothes. How can someone so rich, who can have fish whenever he wants, go to baseball games, still feel such desperation? I'm afraid I must insist on desperation. By the fourth week, the embryo has nearly tied itself inside out. If that doesn't help, you'll just have to wait, which may involve sleeping, which may involve dreaming, and sometimes dreaming works. Father, why have you returned dirt on your morning vest? You cannot control your laughter. You cannot control your love. You know not to hit the brakes on ice, but do anyway. You bend the nail, but keep hammering, because hammering makes the world. Thank you.